Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. We are eager to offer amazingly competitive prices, plus an additional $1,000 Costco discount on all new Cherry Hill Volvos. When leasing or purchasing a new or certified Cherry Hill Volvo, you become a valued part of our team. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, live from the Malamut & Associates Law Studios, the revolution will be broadcast. This is the next generation of talk. Now, the Rich Cioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
You can't just turn around to a neighborhood and go, you're getting a safe injection site. A highly controversial issue like that, whether it saves lives or not, is not the point. The residents of that neighborhood get a say. That's how it's supposed to work. It doesn't matter whether it's, by the way, whether it's a safe injection site or it's a casino, they're supposed to get a say. You have hearings on these matters. The local residents get input. It's exactly the basis of self-governance that I'm talking about here. And that's the theme of the show today. We're supposed to be in charge. We're not in charge. Between secret courts and between the government shoving things like safe injection sites down our throats, we have no say anymore. It's ridiculous. You want to know why Trump won? Because Trump said, I'm going to fight back on this nonsense. And he does. And people know it. And they see it. They do. They see it. What happened here, okay, with this safe injection site? Whether you agree with the policy or not, you can't just tell a neighborhood, you're getting it. Tough noogies. And you're getting it in a week. It's ridiculous. They wouldn't do that with, if there was going to be, say, an Amazon manufacturing facility opening up next week, they'd give them more than a week's notice to talk about it, would they not? Why is the safe injection site different? Just think about that. Leave a safe injection site out of it for a second. Just ask yourself a question. If it was going to be an Amazon distribution facility and employ 3,000 people, would the residents of Broad and Passyunk get a say? Would they be able to have a hearing on it? Would they be able to talk about it? Damn right they would. Right? And in the case of New York City, AOC would chase them out of town. Chase them out of town. Lose all those jobs. It's what she did, you know, in her district with Amazon, the Amazon facility. Oh, I should mention, too, if they do redistrict, and they will, and New York's going to lose a seat in the House of Representatives, I believe, her seat's gone. They hate her. They're going to get her out. They're going to just take her district. Goodbye. Cuomo will do that. You mark my words. You'll see. She's a pain in the ass, and they're going to get rid of her. You mark my words. Now, let's understand here. I think what's really key about this safe injection site, as a local resident said it, she said it better than I could. She was furious, yelling at Ed Rendell. Rendell's got some nerve. You know, I like Ed personally, but, you know, I disagree with him on a million things. This is one of them. He has no right to come into a neighborhood that's not his neighborhood and say, you're getting this. Put it in your neighborhood, Ed. Put it next to your house. The people in this neighborhood have a right to be furious. You know why? Because a safe injection site could potentially devastate their home values. Devastate their home values. The businesses should be upset. It could devastate their values, too. You could turn that entire area into a wasteland. Or you could turn it into an oasis. I don't know. You know how you figure it out? A public hearing. That's how. Yesterday was not a public hearing. What happened yesterday was Governor Ed Rendell and a bunch of people told a neighborhood in Philadelphia, you're getting this. Like it or not, you're getting it. If you don't like it, too bad. That's what happened yesterday. And this woman who spoke yesterday at the hearing, she was great. And she I think she represents a lot of what's going on. Greg, what's her name?
I actually don't.
All right, can we get that, please? Let's say
Angry Mama Bear.
Angry Mama Bear, yes.
She was awesome. And Ed Rendell had this look on his face like, ruh-roh.
Yeah, Ed Rendell didn't know exactly what to say at that moment.
He looked like a puppy whose tail just gets stepped on. This woman was awesome, and it went viral.
Cut six.
To us, you don't come to our meetings. When we had a meeting about crime, where were you to tell us about what was going on? You were all silent. You were all silent, and you were silent because you snuck it in. You blindsided. abandoned us. So tell everybody in South Philly, generations of families who don't leave, who have college degrees, who sit there and stay in their community, who raise our children there. Because for you, that's the street you go down when you go to an Eagles game and a Sixers game. You don't sit there and live in that community. You don't walk on date night like my husband and I do to Passyunk Avenue. You don't take your kids to the daycare like I do. And what about the mothers who have to sit there and walk by and step over the bags to take their kids into the daycare? Are you going to clean our outside? I don't care about inside. I care about needles outside. I care about bags outside. I care about what my children have to see at 6 and 10 years old that I have to explain hardened drug addiction. This is unacceptable, and you were a sneak about it. Look at us when we tell you, Mr. Rendell, you were a sneak. I will not call you governor because you are no longer governor. You're a sneak.
Now, she's 100% right, and I have to, you know, you got to understand this, too. A lot of local politicians, at least pretending that they're outraged, I don't know if they really are or not, but Laura McChrystal writing in the Inquirer today, the Daily News, and Sean Collins Walsh, it has Kenny's blessing, others not so much. From a Democratic Socialist state representative to a federal prosecutor appointed by President Donald Trump, Philadelphia officials on Wednesday roundly criticized the plan supported by Mayor Jim Kenney to open the nation's first supervised injection site in South Philadelphia next week. City Council President Darrell Clark went so far as to say he opposes the opening of the safe injection site in Philadelphia, a position he had not previously taken. Even progressives open to using supervised injection as a tool to fight the city's crippling opioid addiction and overdose issues were critical of Safe House, the nonprofit formed to open the site. And they're critical of the city's handling of the announcement, which they did yesterday, a hastily organized announcement. I'm angry, said Councilmember Mark Squilla, a frequent Kenny ally whose district is just across Broad Street from the planned site. It seems like their whole motto is to open it first and explain it later, which is horrendous. The reaction from elected officials from across the political spectrum reflects the obstacles Mayor Kenny faces in his first term and his fight of the second term, which began last month. Now, I got to tell you, the idea now that you would just shove this down a neighborhood's throat. And it's Ed Rendell lives in Philadelphia. It could be his neighborhood if you wanted it to be, but it's not. Notice that? That's something right there. That's ridiculous. You don't even give these residents a hearing? It's outrageous. 855-839-1210. Mark is in South Philly. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Rich. How are you?
Good.
Good morning. My name is Mark. I'm a recovering addict, and I live in South Philly. And my point is, every addict, I don't care what drug you're on, has the opportunity to get clean. You have meetings, NA meetings, Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. You also have hospitals that deal with mental health issues. I'm dual diagnosed, mental health and drug and alcohol issues. I've been in recovery. I've been in recovery now for a long time. I'm clean and sober. And I'm just going to say this. If you go to these injection sites that are posed by the government is in letting you be enabled. It's going to continue to make you stay on drugs. These people have a commitment to get off of drugs, to get better. There's resources out there. And they don't want to use the resources. I talked to a lot of people, they're not ready yet. When are you going to be ready? When are you going to wind up dead? We have a saying in the meetings, jails, institutions are death. And if nothing changes, nothing changes. And something's got to change. I had my car robbed 6 times in 1 year because people trying to break in to get money and stuff for drugs. I'm a recovering addict. And I got something to say for the mayor. Wise up. Because I got something to say to people in Philadelphia too. Wise up! You get what you get. You deserve what you get. If you vote for Democrats, you get Democrats. Nothing changes. Nothing changes. That's what I got to say.
Well, you well said. And listen, brother. God bless you and your recovery, man. Good job.
Thank you.
And keep it up. All right.
All right. God bless.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it, pal. Sean is in Bensalem. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Rich, I think we should put these safe injection sites right next to Eddie's other legacy, the casino. That would be a perfect spot for them.
Put it in his neighborhood. Put it next to his house.
Next to his casino. Because remember, we were going to get the casinos, and then the schools will be saved. The roads will be saved. All this money from the casinos will be saved. Well, it's his legacy. Put it right next to his sugar house.
All right. I think they got a new name now, by the way. Sean, thank you, bud, for the call. Appreciate it very much. I got questions, too. Here's my question. Ready? If I'm a dealer and I want to, because you can't, they're not going to provide you the heroin. So you got to show BYOH, bring your own heroin is the thing, right? So bring your own heroin. They'll give you the needle, But you have to bring the heroin. It's like it's bringing wine to a restaurant. They give you the glasses. Did you notice that, by the way? You ever do a BYOB? You ever go BYOB?
Yes.
They give you the glasses.
Right.
And the cork, but you got to bring the wine. Okay, so what do you do before you go to a BYOB restaurant?
You need to stop and get some wine.
Okay. Now, where do you go and get your wine?
Well, a lot of people go, oh, I forgot to get the wine, so you got to get it on your way.
Right.
Close to the place, right?
Right.
Close to where you're heading.
Now, what if that wine store was illegal and you went in there and bought wine? And the city of Philadelphia said, don't worry about it. You're allowed to buy the wine there because you can bring it to our BYOB restaurant. Don't worry about it. Imagine that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So then would that encourage more or less people to sell illegal wine in that neighborhood?
Definitely more.
Because there's people who want to do what? Buy the wine, right?
Right. Supply and demand.
Supply and demand. So if I'm a heroin dealer, do I go to Kensington and deal it, or do I go to a block or even 10 feet from the safe injection site and deal it? I know people are coming there, want to buy my product.
Right.
They have to buy it. It's not going to be provided to them when they get inside.
Well, it's just like ticket scalpers. Go to a concert. You don't see ticket scalpers in front of the street where we work.
Right.
They go where the action is.
You go where the action is. So if I'm going to a safe injection site and I need to bring my own heroin, I get there and they go, where's your heroin? I go, I don't have any heroin. I'll go buy some. I'll be right back. I walk out the door. I go buy heroin. Is that drug dealer getting in trouble?
They should.
But will they? Or will we have sanctuary for drug dealers in Philadelphia now? Within the sanctuary, within the safe injection zone?
Yeah, now, if I'm a resident or a business person in South Philadelphia, I would just say, get cameras. Put all this stuff viral.
But are the Philadelphia police going to be allowed to arrest anybody outside of the safe injection area for either selling or buying? That's my question. Because this is an important question to understand. If I have to bring the heroin with me, then I have to purchase it or make it, right? And if I purchase it, then that's against the law. If somebody sells it to me, it's against the law. But how else am I going to bring that to the safe injection site?
Right. Well, you bring up an issue of like sanctuary. Now, it would be that would be a sanctuary issue where Bill McSwain comes in.
Well, no, don't okay. Get ahead of it.
Right.
So, sanctuary would be issued first by who? By the cops, right?
Right.
By the mayor.
Fault,
right. Not their fault.
The city.
Mayor would say, turn around. Do not arrest anybody who's we would have like in, you know, the show The Wire where they had Hamsterdam. You basically would have a stretch of the city where drugs would be legal. Right.
Yeah.
Now,
oh,
to your point about Bill McSwain, the DEA doesn't have to listen to Kenny, and heroin is still classified as a number one bad drug on the federal level. So what happens then if that person who you're buying the heroin from happens to be a DEA agent? So now the question then becomes, if there's drug dealers coming to a neighborhood, there's also going to be who else coming to that neighborhood? People who want to arrest drug dealers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because supply and demand. You got a supply of drug dealers. You got agents who want to arrest drug dealers, so they show up too. So then the question then becomes, does this area become nothing more than essentially now the Wild West? And if I'm going to do heroin, do I want to be there buying my heroin, knowing that it's very likely I could be buying it from a DEA agent who's undercover? Or do I want to buy it somewhere else? And if I buy it somewhere else and I'm not near the safe injection site, then what happens? You see what I mean? All these questions that need to be asked. If the city doesn't provide the heroin, then what do you do? What do you do? So I say the city of Philadelphia should give out heroin. No? What?
At least if the city did that, you know it would be clean, right?
Right.
I mean,
so the city of Philadelphia should provide the heroin.
By the way, I'm not advocating that because I think this whole thing is nuts. But I mean, if we're going down this road where, you know, it's going to be supervised safe injection sites, they might as well, you know, give out heroin that they've tested, right?
You got to give safe heroin out. You got to give the needles, the heroin, all of it. You got to give the whole package.
No, if I'm anybody federal, then I'm going to arrest the mayor and anybody else who has become a drug dealer.
So then if the city's giving out heroin, then the city leaders are going to get arrested.
Because they're drug dealers.
Correct.
And heroin is...
So now you're going to have a standoff at the OK Corral,
right,
and Broad and Pashunk.
And what happens when the first... Somebody injects heroin, they're out for an hour or two, they get up, they get in a car, and they drive somewhere, and they get in an accident or kill somebody.
Right.
What, like, when that first happens, then what's the remedy? Like, who can you sue? Can the
can't
first
sue government? You can't.
But I mean,
can you sue a nonprofit?
They supplied them, right?
If the nonprofit
bars.
What's that?
People want to sue bars.
Right? They do, and this is ridiculous. If a bartender overserves you and you kill somebody, it's apparently now the bartender's fault. So, not your fault for being drunk and driving. So I want to know then, to your point, Greg, if you then kill somebody because you're high and driving, then would it be the safe injection site's fault? The answer would be no. They would be covered by sovereign immunity. So you're not going to be able to sue them if they're operating with the city under the city's consent and the state's consent.
Oh my God.
So. What? This is a mess. This is a total mess. And this is why you have to have hearings on these things. Where does Ed Rendell live? East Falls?
I believe so. He used
to. Is he still there?
I believe so.
Well, if he is, then it should be in East Falls. It should be wherever Ed Rendell lives.
No, don't say East Falls. That's over by me, close to Chestnut Hill.
I know, but it's
not in my backyard.
Right. So nobody wants it in their backyard,
no.
By the way, including Ed Rendell.
Right.
Maybe like Villanova. Maybe Villanova. I mean,
the Main Line?
Oh, yeah. The Main Line.
I'm just saying that they love,
go ahead,
you know,
with that.
I'm sure they're
very woke.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
Tori Windham is senior counsel for the Beckett Foundation for Religious Liberty, and I'm so grateful that you made time today. This is a big deal that the United States Supreme Court has agreed to hear this case. It's a local case right out of Philadelphia regarding adoption agencies and faith-based agencies with regards to foster care and the adoption system. I'm an adoptive dad. Adoption is very important to me, and a lot of people are looking at this case. So, Lori, welcome and congrats on the Supreme Court granting cert in this. That's huge.
Well, thank you. It is huge. We think it's going to be a really big case, and we were thrilled to hear that the court is taking it up. This is a critically important issue.
So give us a little background on this. I know that the you're representing basically a couple moms, Sharon L. Fulton and Tony Sims Bush. Is that right?
Yes, that's right, along with Catholic Social Services of Philadelphia.
Now, Catholic Social Services of Philadelphia has been involved in foster care placement for decades, right?
Yes, they've actually been doing this for 100 years.
Wow. And the two moms, Sharon L. and Tony, both found their families through Catholic Services, right?
That's right. They're both foster and adoptive moms who are so thankful for the relationships they have and the help that they receive through Catholic Social Services.
Sharon L. Fulton has fostered more than 40 children over 25 years in partnership with Catholic Social Services. I mean, that's amazing. And Tony Sims Bush is a former social worker who recently adopted the children she fostered through CSS. Both mothers chose CSS because the agency shares their most deeply held values and beliefs. And I want to make this point very, very clear. I mean, this is not a case to stop same-sex couples from adopting. This is not some effort by some religious group to keep, same-sex couples from achieving their dream of becoming parents. This is the city of Philadelphia saying to Catholic Services, you can't participate in the foster care program unless you violate your sincerely held religious beliefs.
That's exactly right, and it's crucially important for people to realize Catholic Social Services is one of 29 agencies out there helping families, and 28 agencies have said we are happy to help same-sex families welcome children and build their families. Catholic Social Services is not trying to stop same-sex families from being able to participate. They're simply asking that they not be required to make written affirmations that are going to contradict their sincerely held beliefs about marriage. They're simply asking for the ability to stand aside and be able to continue participating and serving children and families.
The city of Philadelphia's argument is that they have a non-discrimination ordinance that they passed, and therefore any organization that does any business with the city whatsoever in any capacity must agree to that, and you cannot discriminate on the basis of sex or gender identity or anything like that. That's their argument that I imagine that they're going to present in court. And so far, a couple of courts have sided with the city. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. The district court in Philadelphia sided with the city, and then the Third Circuit Court of Appeals did as well. But it's interesting to note that in an earlier part of the case, three Supreme Court justices thought that Catholic Social Services and these foster moms ought to get an emergency order for relief. So we've had good indications from the Supreme Court that they may well go the other way.
which I hope they do, by the way, because, again, Catholic Services is not looking to stop anyone from achieving their dreams of becoming a parent. They're not looking to stop children from being placed into homes. They just simply have their beliefs, and they want to help children find homes. And I don't know why there's a conflict there. I don't understand why the city is saying to them, give up your beliefs. You have to follow our beliefs. It's the kids who suffer. And Catholic Services is not hurting any single person here whatsoever by just holding on to their sincerely held beliefs. I don't know where the victim is by allowing them to continue to participate in placing kids in foster care.
I think that's really well said. In fact, when we started this case, we asked in court if anybody was aware of a same-sex couple having even approached Catholic Social Services asking to become foster parents, and there's no indication that that had ever happened. And so this really was an unnecessary dispute, an unnecessary action by Philadelphia. And what's most troubling is there are empty beds today. There are homes of families who work with Catholic Social Services who want to welcome more children into their homes and are unable to do that because the city will not lift this ban and allow Catholic Social Services and their foster families to continue serving children.
The other ramification of this too, Lori, is that, and I know this from my wife and I adopting two children, it's very difficult for parents who are trying to adopt. There's so many hurdles, and when agencies like Catholic Services decide to get out of the adoption business, you know, they just say it's too much. We have to comply with the state and all of their nonsense and abandon our own beliefs and that sort of thing. It's harder on parents who are trying to find children, first of all. It's harder for children. It's harder just for everybody. We should be encouraging more entities to be involved in the adoption and foster care placement. You know, one of the agencies we adopted from in South Jersey, they place children with same-sex couples. There's no conflict there. They didn't refuse to serve us. They didn't refuse to serve them. So, in other words, there's plenty of alternatives for families if CSS is not going to be able to help their needs. And I'm sure they're happy to give them the list of, to you said, the 28 other agencies that will happily help.
Yes, that's exactly right. They are not standing in anybody's way. And what's especially troubling is that this is a Philadelphia problem, but this is not limited to Philadelphia. We have seen cases nationwide, including in Washington, D.C., where I'm based, where Catholic Social Services and other religious providers have had to close their doors because cities have decided to crack down. And so that's why it's so important that the Supreme Court is taking on this case, because it's important to halt this pattern and to ensure, especially as the numbers of children in foster care continue to grow, to ensure that we have all hands on deck.
I'm very happy to have Lori Windham on the show. She's a senior counsel at Beckett. Beckett fights for religious liberty for all people. And this case, which will be heard before the United States Supreme Court this fall regarding Philadelphia Catholic Services and the city of Philadelphia saying you must place children with same-sex couples or otherwise you can't place children anywhere. And that is just an absolute, I think, absurd burden for them to reach. Because really what it says is, You, Catholic Services, you cannot hold your beliefs. And I think anytime government forces someone to give up their beliefs and the person is not hurting anybody, the person's not doing anything that causes anyone to be a victim in anything, that's very dangerous. We should never let the government force us to abandon our beliefs. Whether somebody agrees with those beliefs or not is immaterial. It's what could happen if everybody turns around and says, okay, fine, we'll make our beliefs government's beliefs. That's incredibly, incredibly troubling.
Absolutely. It's a really disturbing rule that Philadelphia is trying to create here, and it fails to understand the diversity of this city and the agencies who are out there and the religious charities who are out there trying to make the city better and trying to serve by living out their faith.
Well, I wish you the best of luck in this. Obviously, the court will hear this fall, and this has worked for children in Philadelphia for over a century, and I'm very happy that Beckett, once again, is stepping up to defend religious liberty and freedom. And Lori, thank you, and best of luck before the United States Supreme Court. This is going to be, obviously, a very, very closely watched case.
Thank you, Rich. We're really excited. We're expecting it to be heard in the fall.
Thanks for taking the Zeoli Show with you. Rich Zeoli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Joe Biden, last night during the town hall meeting, any concerns about Trump refusing to leave office can be taken seriously. This idea that Trump would lose and then not leave the White House, and he would just bombard himself inside the White House and not leave the building, I guess. Cut 15.
Sir, what is your plan if Trump loses but refuses to concede based on allegations?
I'm glad they laughed at that question because it's a stupid question, is it not? Refuses to leave the White House. I'm not going. Staying in the blue room.
This has been a theme on Bill Maher's show for the last few months.
Has it really?
Yeah. He brings it up to every Democratic candidate that he talks to and says, what is your plan if he doesn't lose or if he doesn't leave?
But do they understand the White House is just a building? It doesn't make you president. Do they think you have to walk into the White House to actually become the president? Is that what they think in their mind? I'm trying to understand this.
I think Bill Maher is just trying to say something provocative that gets an interesting answer because he's a smart guy. He knows.
Because how would it play out?
Yeah.
I'm the president. I lose. And I go, well, you know what? I'm staying. And the people are like, okay. Yeah, I'm not leaving. All right. But the new president's getting inaugurated next week. Yeah, it doesn't matter. I'm still president. All right. Well, listen, I'm going to send my resume out because I got to get another job. And, so I'm going to shoot the old resume out. Can I get a recommendation letter, Mr. President? Why? I'm not leaving. Okay. Right. But just on the off chance this doesn't work out well, you barricading yourself in the White House, I got kids to feed. So can I, like, how does it play out exactly? I'm the new president. I get inaugurated. I'm a commander in chief at that point. I need to get this guy out of the White House. He's at that point, what would he be called? A
squatter.
A squatter.
A squatter.
Which in D.C., actually, you have rights as a squatter.
Oh, my goodness.
Trump would be able to stay there as long as he wanted.
6 months, actually. You have 6 months to leave a resident.
6 months.
6 months.
And, all right, so.
Wait, so Ivanka, Jared.
They can all stay.
Well, they don't live in the White House. Only Trump and Melania do.
Okay.
Right? So only the residents of the White House, the first family.
And Barron. They could be squatters for 6 months.
Yeah, they go, I'm not leaving. I got 6 months. I'm a squatter. I get squatter's rights. Excuse me.
Oh, my God.
Squatter's rights.
My father-in-law is a landlord. He deals with this all the time. 6 months they have.
That's unbelievable.
Where they can do nothing about it. It's they don't have to pay nothing.
That would be great. Let's say, for example, Bloomberg's president and Trump's a squatter in the residence. He can come down and just go, Mini Mike, did they raise the desk for you? And then like run back up to the residence. That would be worth it. Trump the squatter, right? Come down and go, can you see over the Resolute desk? Do you need help? And then, you know, just like run back to the residence. I'm not leaving. Walk out onto the portico, you know, the Truman balcony and go, still not leaving. Five more months. Got 5 months.
There's a countdown clock. It's like kick him out.
It's like kick him out. DC squatter laws.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, really. So I win the election. I'm the president of the United States now. I guess what they're saying is that if Trump decided to stay, the military would decide to back him, I guess, and then not back the new president. And then, in which case, you'd have what would be effectively now. A civil war, a coup d'etat. I'm not exactly sure what's going to occur, but that's what they're saying, right? That's ultimately at the heart of it is going to be who's enforcing the transfer of power. And so, I mean, in the entire history of this country, even during a civil war, we've never had an issue with the transfer of power, right? Never. But this time around, they're going to go, well, Trump said he's president, so we're going to listen to him and not the guy who won the election. Does anybody believe that?
No, what I interpret from Bill Maher, especially with that Bannon interview he did, Bill Maher is convinced, as you know, you are, a lot of experts are, that Trump will easily win re-election. So I think that's when he says he's not going to leave, he means he's going to be re-elected.
Yeah.
Which in his mind is like he's not going to leave.
Excuse me. 2 months left to squatter's rights. Bring the eggs.
Yeah, do they have to provide? Yeah,
they got to feed them.
Food?
Yeah.
No, wait. They could just get the giant pea pod to deliver. No,
right. Yeah, giant will deliver. Or every day be like, is my pizza here yet? Or Uber Eats showing up at the White House with McDonald's for him? Uber Eats every day. Big Mac meal. Oh. Did Barron get the Happy Meal? Every day. Uber Eats. And just to tick Bloomberg off, he would get the biggest drinks he could
big gulp.
Brought to the White House. Just to tick Bloomberg off. Well, let's hear the stupidity of this question and then the stupidity of Joe Biden's answer.
Sir, what is your plan if Trump loses but refuses to concede based on allegations by his supporters of irregularities and he refuses to step down as president based on those allegations?
I'm going to ask you all a rhetorical question. It's a serious question, serious concern.
No,
did you
not.
Ever think in your lifetime, no matter how young or old you are, any person would be able to ask that question to be taken seriously? No, I'm not joking.
Hillary asked it.
Our democracy is at risk. 4 years of this guy, the way he has treated the military, the way he has dismissed the intelligence community, the way he has absolutely undercut the FBI, the way he has gone after all these, I have no worry about him being escorted out of the White House.
Not unusual for the President of the United States to watch our town halls. Hearing something like that, communicating
he's not,
to the audience,
Cuomo,
obviously
listen,
important.
Lesser.
I left that in there. Just
Lesser.
Right.
Let's get something straight here. The president's not watching the town hall. Nobody's watching your town hall. All right, let's get that straight. Lesser Cuomo, please, and the lesser town hall. So the president will be escorted out of the White House. What if he doesn't, though? What if he stays? You know how you get him? Land shark. The old Chevy Chase bit on Saturday Night Live. Go, Uber Eats. Grubhub, have your quarter pounder with cheese here. Oh, good. My food. And go down, open the door and go, land shark, and then grab him and then take him out. Pull him out of the White House. Actually, you know, Ted is in Swarthmore. He has an excellent, excellent suggestion. Yes, Ted, good morning.
Good morning, Rich. Great job of you as well, as usual. Hey, Donald Trump just nearly needs to appease all the Democrats and make the White House a safe injection site.
Yeah,
because
that's brilliant.
Sure none of them would have a problem with that.
I love it. That's what he could do. He could say, if he loses, go, well, that's now a safe injection site. You know, I've got 3 months now, and I'm going to make it a safe injection site. And then what are they going to do? I love it. Good job,
well,
Ted.
They would. They would love it.
Good job. Rich, thanks, buddy. Way. Appreciate it. Let's Stuart's in Easton. Yes, Stuart. Hello, good morning.
Rich, good morning.
Hey.
Good morning, Rich. How are you?
Good, buddy.
Good. Hey, I'm getting really tired of the Dems every election cycle. They come out and it's all the scary guns. Oh, the assault weapons. Deers haven't worn a flak jacket.
Right.
Well, these assault weapons, or quote-unquote assault weapons, come out in so many different calibers. It's, if you're any type of sporting person, gun person, hunting person, you should be able to see through this in a heartbeat.
Well, I can't imagine any. I can't imagine. I can't imagine anybody who supports the Second Amendment for a second backing Mike Bloomberg. I can't. How could you?
No, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Not to mention some of the other things he said. You know, he's going to the trans fat, the soda ban. What the hell else is he going to ban?
Not safe injection sites.
Ridiculous.
Stuart, thanks for the call, buddy. I appreciate it. Yeah, look, here's the deal. I mean, Bloomberg, the joke about the deer in the flak jacket, it's stupid, but it also confirms a thought that these guys have, which is that guns are for hunting and guns are for skeet shooting. I remember years ago, Scott Pelley on the CBS Evening News asked Joe Biden what sort of sporting purpose does a semi-automatic rifle have? And Joe Biden said, none whatsoever. Exactly. Guns are not for sport. Guns are not for sport. Soccer balls are for sport. Guns are not for sport. Guns are for protection, self-defense. That's what guns are for. Guns are not for sport. Now, you can use them for sport, but that's not what they're for. That's the difference right there in the mentality. The mentality of a guy like Bloomberg is, and a guy like Biden, all these other Democrats, is that guns are for hunting purposes. Guns are for sport and recreation purposes. No, they're not. Those are other uses for them. Those are what we'd say off-label uses. Like you have a prescription drug and they go, well, the off-label use also treats this. Guns are for self-defense, period. If you also choose to use it to hunt an animal, fine, but you don't have to. You can use a bow and arrow, right? Or you could use a knife. You want to be like Rambo. But and you can shoot a gun off a cruise ship. You know, and if you're quarantined with the coronavirus and you can't leave, but that's not the purpose of it. We didn't fight a revolution because our founders wanted to do more skeet shooting. We didn't fight a revolution because our founders felt like their hunting rights were being limited. That's not what this is about. And it's not a privilege. It's a right. Period. 855-839-1210. 855-839-12.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
1210.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
So glad you're here today, every day, of course. Thanks for being part of the show. 855-839-1210. I mentioned to you Bernie Sanders was called out in his 1980s comments about Fidel Castro. If any candidate's going to be influenced by Russia, it's Bernie. Because, come on, kids, let's face it. The guy is a guy who's professed a deep and profound admiration for many of the Soviet Union policies, including their transportation system. And he's praised Cuba, and he's praised other dictators around the world. He loves their models of free health care and public transit and literacy, for example. Now, Bernie Sanders leads a Pennsylvania primary poll with a close race against Trump. But I don't believe that for a second. I think Bernie Sanders would get destroyed by Donald Trump in most places. The reason why right now, though, Bernie's leading everything is because the media attention around Bernie is huge. But remember something, Bernie's numbers have not changed that much since 2016. So the idea that he's gotten more support since then, he hasn't. But he certainly has very, very passionate and loyal supporters. There's no doubt about that. No doubt. And the DNC is going to try to do everything they possibly can to stop him from becoming president. Because you know what? If he runs for president, a lot of this stuff of him praising Fidel Castro, like how does that play in Florida, for example, if he runs for president? If he's the nominee, he gets killed in Florida with comments like that. Or the other times he's praised Russia. This is him on 60 Minutes with Anderson Cooper, defending his 1980s comments about Fidel Castro. Cut 16.
Back in the 1980s, Sanders had some positive things to say about the former Soviet Union and the Sandinistas in Nicaragua.
And everybody was totally convinced.
Here he is explaining why the Cuban people didn't rise up and help the U.S. overthrow Cuban leader Fidel Castro.
He educated the kids, gave them health care, totally transformed the society.
We're very opposed to the authoritarian nature of Cuba. But you know, it's unfair to simply say everything is bad. You know, when Fidel Castro came into office, you know what he did? He had a massive literacy program. Is that a bad thing? Even though Fidel Castro did it?
There's a lot of dissidents imprisoned in Cuba.
That's right.
And they got
and
books.
We condemn that.
And they got coloring books. He gave them all markers and books.
I do not think that Kim Jong-un is a good friend. I don't trade
He doesn't
letters.
Give books to anybody.
Dictator. Vladimir Putin, not a great friend of mine.
Not a great friend, a good friend. But I'm working on that. Still mad about me not inviting him to my wedding in Russia, but we're working on it.
He holds grudges.
He holds grudges, yeah. I told Vlad, I said, Vlad, you got to get over it, all right? Not a great friend, good friend, better than acquaintance.
Oh, boy.
Hope to be a great friend. That's my goal. Got to have goals. After he won Nevada with the same numbers he won Nevada, or lost Nevada to in 2016, 47%, his numbers have not changed, by the way. His numbers have not changed at all from where he was in 2016. But everybody reported out of the media as this massive, massive win for Bernie Sanders. Same as he did in 2016, only he won this time with the same number. It's amazing because there's more candidates now to defuse the opposition to him. So Bernie on his Nevada speech, cut one.
So if we stand together, if we do not
Did you like... You didn't tinker with that,
did you?
I did
not tinker with that at all.
His megaphone needs some batteries, huh?
Oh, man.
Wow.
Wow. It's...
And if we stand together,
Can you?
My God, man.
So if we stand together, if we do not allow Trump and his friends to divide us up, that's what they're trying to do every day.
Wow. Whoa,
they're
easy.
Trying to divide us up, black and white and Latino, Native American, Asian American, gay and straight. They want to divide us up.
Fake Indian, real Indian. No, it's
weak and powerless. When we stand together,
oh boy.
When we come together, there is nothing we cannot accomplish.
Man.
Wait. Is that Megaphone Bernie or is that real Bernie?
I mean, real Bernie.
What we have
I think he's doing an impression of Megaphone Bernie, yes. though. I think Bernie Sanders is doing an impression of me doing Megaphone Bernie.
We have got to do as a country is do everything possible to end the hatred. We are all human beings with common
dreams. You hate
dreams.
Me, I hate you. End the hatred. I hate everybody. And no more handshaking.
And we got to end that hatred. We got to come
Except
together.
Except we should all hate Donald Trump because he's terrible.
Well, yeah, that hatred's
right, that
fine.
Hatred's okay. End the hatred, except for Donald Trump. He's the most dangerous president ever in my lifetime.
We got to bring people together. And as president, I will do everything I can to do that. And let me tell you this.
We're going to need four or five microphones a day when I'm president.
I mean...
Just a cacophony of microphones.
That poor sound guy at that
has to keep
speech.
Adjusting the levels,
I just,
right?
I feel for him. I do.
Our administration will, in fact, look like America.
With broads and no, and black people and black broads and
no, come on,
old black people
no,
and young people. And
Megaphone Bernie, that is super offensive.
I call he's them a very offensive person. He's very offensive.
There will be at least one old white guy up there.
That'll be me. But I'll be the only one up there. I'll be the only old white guy, and the only one. The others will be taken out and shot.
No, it's not.
Like my good friend Stalin did.
But you're going to look, when you see that cabinet, when you see that administration, you're going to say, wow, this is what America looks like.
Except they're all commies. They're all going to be commies, but otherwise exactly like what America looks like. But with hammers and sickles and whatnot.
So,
and one old white guy there with my good friend Stalin and Lenin. Vlad Putin, not a great friend.
No.
But holding out hope. He'll come to my inaugural. We'll be good.
We have more.
It's insane.
So when he won, or so when the results came out of the Nevada caucus, he was actually in Texas. So we have a little bit of that speech. You can play as much of this
Bernie
as you want.
Bernie in Texas.
Yeah, it's...
How y'all no, it's... doing? Try to be... Should keep it real.
Thank you, San Antonio!
Can I get a giddy up?
No, it's not.
And let me introduce to you the next First Lady of the United States.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
No, it was his wife.
My plan is to leave this old bag and
no, it's the, she got it, oh,
be with her.
I don't. She's a lovely woman, I think. I don't know.
I know.
You will be very proud of her as First Lady.
Oh, boy.
After I pardon her when she sends to federal prison. Well, she's under investigation.
Yeah, that is actually true.
On day one, I will pardon this broad and you'll be very proud of her.
Maybe you won't.
That's the amazing thing, right? Baby, I wish I could help. Well, but my lawyers are saying there's nothing I can do.
But you're the president, sir.
They're saying it'd be a conflict of interest. There's nothing I can do.
Seen today in Texas, we were in El Paso. We're here now. Don't tell anybody. I don't want to get them nervous. We are going to win the Democratic primary in Texas.
Can I get a giddy up, y'all? Can I get a giddy up, y'all?
And you know,
I'm going to take my horse. To the old town road.
No. I'm going to ride. No, that's a song. We don't need to sound hip.
Cowboy Bernie.
No,
cow person Bernie. Megaphone Bernie.
Megaphone Bernie does not need to seem hip like he knows the new current songs.
By the way, he did get an endorsement from Marianne Williamson.
Did he really?
Yeah, she said he's the leader of the revolution.
Wow. Well, she knows the dead, so.
Yeah, so.
Is she still in it?
No, no, but she's Oprah's spiritual advisor. She's right. Very spiritual. She's in touch with the spirits.
Yes.
The living and the dead.
Gets very, very upset easily. So don't tell him that we're going to beat him here in Texas.
Trump is talking about.
Right. When I was a kid, I played cowboys and Indians. Now I play cowboys and fake Indians against Elizabeth Warren.
Thanks for taking the Zeoli Show with you. Rich Zeoli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
It's time for President Trump to abolish the FISA court. There, I said it, okay? 855-839-1210. And I tweeted as much as well. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court. More than anything, here's the deal. We can go back and forth on issues all day long, but if we don't have free and fair elections in this country, we don't have a country. We don't have a republic, and that's just the reality. So understand that it's like, take this, for example. The outrage that South Philadelphia residents feel about having a safe injection site coming to their neighborhood, and they didn't even get the courtesy of having a hearing on it. They wouldn't do that if they were going to open a store in their neighborhood or put a high-rise up in their neighborhood. The whole thing about self-government is we get to make these decisions, right? We are in charge. So when the government just turns around and says, well, we're doing this and you don't get a say in this process, that is the worst. That's the worst thing you can do ever. And, you know, the anger that residents in South Philly feel, and I completely understand it because I'd be so furious if this were my neighborhood. It's their neighborhood. It's not Ed Rendell's neighborhood. He's not putting it in his neighborhood. He's putting it in South Philly. And the residents down there have a right to be furious. Because they didn't even get the courtesy of a planning board meeting, a zoning board meeting, nothing. They were just told, you're going to get a supervised injection site, whether you like it or not. See, government can't work that way. It can't work that way. It's not supposed to work that way. And on the federal level, this ties in perfectly with the FISA court. It really does. Because like anything else in life, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And years ago, in 1979, I believe it was, they established the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court to have a way to be able to surveil foreigners, not American citizens, foreigners. What's happened over time? Like any other time, you give the government the ability to have a tool in its toolbox to be able to watch over us or protect us for the children. The government takes that tool and weaponizes it and abuses it politically. And I'm telling you right now, that is the Zeoli theorem, and I've never been proven wrong on that point. Whether it's the Patriot Act or the FISA court, you give the government the ability to, quote, keep us safe, end quote, they will find a way to abuse that power and use it for political purposes. And that's exactly what happened with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court. They've been approving these applications by the Justice Department 98, 99% of the time. It's a rubber stamp for the government. And unlike a normal court, you, as a American citizen, have no constitutional protections in the process. The judge is all you got. And the judge rubber stamps what the government wants. And there's no oversight of it. And there's no ability for defense attorneys to be involved. Nothing. Nothing. And so it has to end. It needs to end. There's no way to reform it. It's like S.H.I.E.L.D. when Hydra infiltrated S.H.I.E.L.D. There's no way to save it. You just have to knock it down and start over. There's no way to fix it. And the fact that FISA became the kind of court it is, so secretive, and expanded its power to be able to spy on American citizens, shows you, and then ultimately was able to infiltrate a presidential campaign, use their power to infiltrate a presidential campaign with the cooperation of the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, the Department of Justice, all these Trump haters. If they had succeeded, then Hillary Clinton would be president. Donald Trump would not. And we would have had the first, at least that we know of, police state election in this country, whereby the government, the federal government's police powers were used for political purposes to infiltrate and change the outcome of an election. There's no way to save the FISA court. It's over. It needs to end. It just has to end. We have courts in this country. They're in the Constitution. See, this is why I always say the Constitution is the rule book, right? If you just follow the rules in life, you do okay. Follow the rule book. What does the rule book say? The rule book says Article 3 establishes a judiciary. And the course of that judiciary, the judiciary has certain responsibilities, but ultimately has to make sure that the constitutional rights of American citizens are being protected. I don't care about foreigners. If you live in Pakistan, you don't have any rights under our Constitution. I don't believe our Constitution spreads around the world. I don't believe it covers people in other countries. So if you're an Iranian and you're doing something against the United States, I don't give a damn about your civil liberties when it comes from my government's perspective. It's not my problem. It's not my problem. But if you're an American of Iranian descent and you're a U.S. citizen, that I do care about. That's a big difference. That's the difference. If you're a United States citizen, you have rights, and the FISA court does not respect your rights, and you have no ability to have your rights protected. Now, this is great. Freedom Works. I love Freedom Works, by the way. Ted Abram wrote this piece. Abolish the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act Court. As a former judge that has approved hundreds of search warrants, I strongly urge that Congress begin hearings to dissolve the FISA court. Why? Michael Horowitz, the Inspector General of the Department of Justice, conducted an investigation of alleged wrongful actions in applications for search warrants from the FISA court. There were four separate applications to conduct electronic surveillance of former Trump assistant Carter Page. The IG concluded that the FBI obtained additional information raising significant questions about the reliability of the Steele dossier. The FBI failed to reassess the Steele dossier, which was relied upon in the FISA applications. Additionally, and more damning, the Inspector General also found that FBI investigators failed to disclose information that was inconsistent with or undercut the assertions contained in the FISA applications. These omissions resulted in inaccurate information being included in the FISA applications. Obviously, there are very serious findings that impact the civil rights of Carter Page and gravely condemn the behavior and practices of the FBI. In response to the IG's report, the FISA court judge Rosemary Collier wrote an order to the FBI. She said, the frequency with which representations made by FBI personnel turned out to be unsupported or contradicted by information in their possession and with which they withheld information detrimental to their case calls into question whether information contained in other FBI applications is reliable. Remember, this is a former judge writing this. There were very specific letters that were not first pleased to the court. In April 2017, Mark Levin, my buddy Mark Levin, who I'll be with next week, Mark Levin's Landmark Legal Foundation presented allegations of wrongdoing and applied to assist the court, which was summarily denied by the judge of the FISA court, Rosemary Collier. Levin said on his show, quote, we presented this judge with the evidence and filed it. Congress needs to find out why these judges, even today, are not holding people accountable. Let me stop from the article for a second. Who are the people to be held accountable? The people that lied to the FISA court. That's who. People like James Comey and others who went to the FISA court and said, hey, here, look, go spy on an American citizen. Go spy. We want you to give us the authority to spy on an American citizen, to violate his Fourth Amendment rights, violate his due process rights. And here's why. Ready? Here's why. We have this application, Your Honor. Here you go. Judge looks at it like they do it 98% of the time. They rubber stamp it. That application was a fugazi, as they say, because it was filled with nonsense from the Christopher Steele dossier. That's the P dossier. Why has the court not exercised its contempt of court powers to investigate the actions of the FBI and the Department of Justice? Why not? This was March 2018, public warnings of a cabal by the FBI and the DOJ by former judge and now Representative Louie Gohmert, who the media likes to say is insane. They love to say Louie Gohmert's insane. But you know what? Louie Gohmert was 100% right when he said, there are too many FBI agents and too many Department of Justice officials that need to be investigated. Whether it's Peter Strzok, Bruce Ohr, Christopher Steele, all these people need to be investigated. And you know, the FBI and the DOJ can't investigate their own top people. Actually, Gohmert toyed with the idea of a special counsel, but had faith in the FISA court and their power of contempt. He said, quote, I don't believe we need a second counsel to look in the FISA courts. The FISA judges, if they had any modicum of self-respect for their courts, they would have already a long time ago called the lawyers in, put somebody in jail for committing a fraud upon the court. That's contempt of court, and somebody should have gone to jail long before. Look, if you lied to a judge or I lied to a judge, if an attorney presented knowingly wrong information to a judge, he'd be locked up and disbarred. But in the FISA court, it's okay. You can lie to them. You can make stuff up. You can give them false information. Nobody gets punished. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. And the judge, this Rosemary Collier woman, puts out a thing slapping them on the wrist. Who cares? She didn't hold anybody in contempt of court. She didn't order anybody's arrest. Now, this former judge writing this piece from Newsworks, which is great, Ted Abram, a former federal judge, he says they've left Congress no choice but to have but to step in and fix the process. Every member of Congress should vote to abolish the FISA court and begin debating protecting the civil rights of Americans while secretly surveilling ever dangerous foreign powers. Foreign powers. Now, who else said that? Devin Nunes said that, too. Devin Nunes, that was actually his quote. Now, let me ask you a question. What do we do, Rich, about terrorists? What if they're an American terrorist? Then you go to a judge. You know, we have a process in this country called the grand jury, right? It's secretive. You know, it's secretive, right? You go to a judge, you get a court. You have a process in this country already where we can get information, where we can get warrants. We get search warrants in this country every freaking day in American courts that are not FISA courts. Every day. Why do we need a special court? A secret court, like this is Russia or Cuba, where we need secret courts that can take away Americans' constitutional rights on the flip of a dime. What do we need that for? We don't need that. Every day in this country, the police or prosecutors, district attorneys go to judges and ask for search warrants, arrest warrants, etc. Every day, every single day. And there's a process, and the process is followed, and the rights of American citizens, whether they be accused drug dealers or rapists or murderers, or just people that owe parking tickets, have to be respected, have to be adhered to, have to be protected. But in the FISA court, it's secret. So they can go after American citizens. All you got to do is just say the T word, terrorism. That's all you got to do. And they can infiltrate a presidential campaign. They can give the police state, the federal law enforcement, the federal surveillance state, the people that are supposed to protect us, the power to infiltrate and spy on a presidential campaign and do the kind of things to try to undermine that campaign and make that candidate lose. That's a police state. The very definition of a police state is not the police using excessive crowd control measures. No, it's not the police having lots and lots of riot gear or spray or using pepper spray on a crowd. No. A police state is when the government uses its national law enforcement powers to infiltrate its political system for the desired outcome of government. We came so close to that coming true. I mean, it was happening, but we came so close to them winning. So it's time to wake the hell up. FISA court needs to go. Now, go. End it. And everybody needs to speak up and make sure that President Trump hears your voice on this. Because if he renews the FISA court, he's wrong. I said he was wrong last time, and I'll say it again. And if I have the opportunity to talk to him, I'll tell him that again. Because if they can do it to him, they can do it to anybody. Enough is enough. FISA court has to go. Start over. It's been infiltrated just like S.H.I.E.L.D. and has to be gone. Goodbye. Start over. We already have a court process in this country. Let's just adhere to it. 855-839-1210.
Thanks for taking the Zeoli Show with you. Rich Zeoli. Weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
All right, let me go right to Donald Trump's first press secretary, Sean Spicer. Sean, welcome back to the show. And, I mean, what a night, huh?
Wow. Rick, I mean, that was kind of I felt like I actually should have to pay to watch that thing. It was such a great night of infighting in the Democratic Party. So I normally am not a big fan of spending my nights watching Democrats debate, but that was certainly worth it.
Yeah, that was something. And I'll tell you something else, too, Sean. You know, you were at the RNC, obviously, before you went to the White House. And after these vicious primaries, it's tough pulling the party together. I don't know how Democrats do it after this. They've torn each other apart. The circular firing squad and their supporters, they must all hate each other at this point.
Well, you heard Klobuchar and a couple of them saying, guys, if we don't stop doing this, we're going to... And they're right. I mean, I think the common sense ones get it, but this is amazing. And I think, but I also think that they recognize, at least a few of them, that, you know, what a Bernie Sanders nomination means. It is literally the embodiment of trying to explain, not just for wanting to be president, but how does everyone down ballot talk about wanting to, you know, have a self-avowed socialist as their nominee?
You know, Bloomberg made a point last night. He said that they're going to lose. They'll lose down ballot all the way down to the state houses. And then he brought up redistricting. And I thought Democrats cannot afford to lose in 2020 when the Republicans will be able to rewrite the maps. I mean, it'll be an epic disaster for them.
No, that's actually, I mean, very few people get that. It's sort of like when you campaign for president, you're talking about judicial nominations. I don't think it resonates with a lot of people except the base. And, you know, it's an interesting observation. I don't know how many people on the Democratic side really care. They should care, and I think it's a really important point for them, for all of us. But, I just don't know that they're going to matter because I don't think that – I think Bloomberg is making a very pragmatic case, and that's, you know, Democrats tend to vote from their gut, which is I just want to win. I want this movement, and it's literally – devoid of whether or not that's a winning prospect.
Sean, you got a new show coming out on Newsmax TV. Congratulations for that. Spicer and Company. It's going to be based out of D.C. It premieres Tuesday, March 3rd at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be a daily show Monday through Friday. What can we look forward to on the show?
Thank you for that. If people are interested too, if they go to SeanSpicer.com, they can sign up and we'll let them know where to find it and who the guests are and stuff. But basically, what I want to do is what you do every morning is have a conversation with folks and not read the news, but discuss the news, talk about what the really interesting point. I mean, the point that you just made about redistricting and why it's important. It went over a lot of people's heads last night on the Democratic side, but explaining to and having a discussion with important people, subject matter experts about what the news means to their lives and having a conversation, a discussion, almost like you would around a dinner table at 6 o'clock every night, I think is a much more interesting way than just sitting there and listening to someone read the news at 6 o'clock.
Now, Sean, you and I both know Donald Trump quite well. And we were there in the early days for him. I think the president on the debate stage this fall, he tears apart anybody that they put up that was on that stage last night. I mean, there's no one on that stage I saw who will be able to go against Donald Trump because he would just, in my mind, it's like a chew toy, like a dog with a chew toy, especially if it's Bernie, he's going to let him praise his buddy Castro. If it's Bloomberg, he's going to, I mean, he's going to just make fun of the guy's height the entire time. Do you see anyone on that stage who can give Trump a run for his money?
I'm just running through the list in my head. No. I mean, if you go down the list last night, I mean, Biden's office game, there's no question about it. Bloomberg was trying to be fake funny. He clearly can't debate. The money, I think he buys everything, and people laugh at his joke privately because he pays him a ton of money. But that was not... I felt like he needed someone with, like, the... You know how, like, you hear, like, dun-dun-dun, like, behind him because he was telling these jokes, and I'm like, oh, my God, that's... Who... Did people laugh in debate, Brett? Because that's not funny. You're right. I mean, you're on the list, and I feel like him standing against Pete Buttigieg would just look awkward because it would be like, you know, Buttigieg would just imagery-wise look like, you know, he's 18, 19 years old.
Yeah, like Trump adopted him or something.
Right. So debate. I don't see anybody up there that can go toe-to-toe with him.
How uncomfortable, by the way, was that naked cowboy joke by Bloomberg last night?
It was funny. I got up this morning and I was telling my wife, I said, you know, Bloomberg, like, just was trying to tell jokes and he couldn't. She's like, give me an example. And I said, he started saying, like, we don't need a naked cowboy in every city. And I'm like, first of all, like, it's not, but even if the delivery was bad, but also, like, I don't know that everybody knows that there's this naked cowboy that kind of hangs out in Times Square and you take pictures with him. But I also don't think it's that funny. I
mean, right.
And it was such an awkward segue because he was trying to talk about how the big his policies of outlawing, like, big gulps wouldn't necessarily apply. And he said, you know, the laws of New York City. And first of all, I was like, did the New York City folks really want that in the first place? Like, you're bringing up a horrible policy that got rejected and panned nationally. And then talking about how you don't want to naked. It was just literally horrible on every front.
You know, you just made the point about that somebody laugh in debate prep. And you and I, we've both done debate prep. You're not supposed to fake laugh in debate prep. That's like rule number one of debate prep.
Well, I think that, like, also, but when you're getting paid the amount of money that he's paying people, they're just like, that's a great joke, sir. Another great one.
Oh, you're killing it tonight, boss.
Keep them coming. And I think that the problem was is that he was so bad in the Nevada debate that he came out and he thought they were like, you know, here's how we're going to do this. And I think that he's one of these people that probably thinks he knows better and was like, you know what I need to do? I need to tell a few jokes.
Right. Oh, man.
And it's like, no, that wasn't the problem. People don't tune into to political debates to be entertained by joke telling. You know, it's not like there's a warm-up act that comes out before the debate. He says, all right, we've got the undercard. Everyone running for mayor, get up here and, you know, tell us a knock-knock joke.
Right, right. And don't forget to tip your waitresses on the way out, folks, all right? You know, oh, and waiters, too. We're gender neutral here. Yeah, I mean, like, come on. It's bad, yeah, really bad.
No, it was, I thought to myself, I felt a lot better last night. You know, just, you always get a little nervous. Now, that doesn't mean that we can take our foot off the pedal. I mean, look, I think, especially where you are, Pennsylvania is going to be ground zero. And what we saw last cycle, and this is where people have got to remember, yes, we did a good job, but we won Pennsylvania last time by 0.4%.
Right.
Like 40-something thousand votes. That's nothing. And so people in the Philly suburbs and wherever have to say, like, look, if you think that this president's done a good job and the country's moving forward and policies have made improved our lives and our communities, then we need to go out and engage because the Democrats get it. And they ran through Pennsylvania big time last year, especially on the west side of the state where we tend to do a little bit better. So I keep telling everyone, look, you must engage. If you believe that the policies are better and that the country is better, then go out there and have those conversations and put up the signs, knock on people's doors, call them, because we now have a big choice. Either the country's making improvements, veterans are getting the benefits, the economy's improving, et cetera, or we're going to move towards a socialist country. And that's what they're all talking about, Medicare for all, education for all, Showtime for all, you know, all cable channels for all,
right.
Netflix channel. I mean, like,
hey, Newsmax for all. You know, I'm just saying.
Yeah, Newsmax. Right? I mean, it's free. If you have cable, you can get Newsmax.
Help a brother out here, right? You know?
Right. But anyway, I think that we've got a very big binary choice coming, and this election is consequential in terms of the direction that our country's going to go for generations. So I think that Donald Trump has sort of created a very strong narrative between what he's done policy-wise, the judges they appointed, the foreign policy, and we've got to get people to say, okay, go out there and make sure your neighbor and your uncles and cousins and you know, everyone else gets it, coworkers.
It's like we always say, Sean, there's only two ways to run, scared or unopposed.
That's right, but I think last time, last cycle in the midterms, a lot of folks were told, oh, well, don't worry, you've got a safe district.
Yeah.
And you think about, you know, all these folks in Texas that we lost. So it's just, anyway, you're right. We've got to get people to understand you got to run scared.
Listen, congrats on the new show. Premieres Tuesday, March 3rd, 6 p.m. Eastern on Newsmax, Spicer and Company. Sean, we'll talk to you again as the election goes on, my friend. And thanks for making the trip back to the show. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Rich. Look forward to talking to you again.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
Last night, Democrat debate also marked the return of crazy drunk retirement Joe Biden, who has not been around since the last debate a week ago. And he was back last night in full form. Crazy drunk retirement Joe Biden. Now, what do I mean by this? I mean, like, you go to a retirement party sometimes and, you know, there's somebody there is forced out of the company and it's not pretty, right? And he's had a couple cocktails, and he's angry that he got forced out. So he's trying to be nice. They give him the gold watch and everything. And then he's like, "How the hell are you people? I built this company." Right? That's it. Now, I know, Dawn, it's a terrible thing to say.
I thought that he held his own last night.
He did. He did. He held his own.
He's still in it.
It was his best night yet.
It was.
Too little, too late. But But last night was the return of the guy who took credit for everything. Did you hear when he interrupted Amy Klobuchar last night?
Yes.
To catch that? So there's Amy Klobuchar, Veep, on stage last night. And they based the character Veep on her. You know that, right?
Yeah, with the,
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Especially with the shaving of the legs.
Exactly. And she's running for vice president, and she's on the stage. She starts talking, and then out of nowhere, crazy drunk retirement guy starts yelling at her about how he did that, he did that. This exchange is amazing.
Wait. The way we do it is having someone leading the ticket from a part of the country that we actually need the votes. So I have long supported the assault weapon ban. I am the author of the bill to close the boyfriend loophole that says that domestic abusers can't go out and get an AK-47.
I wrote that bill.
Along with... You didn't write that bill.
I wrote that bill. I wrote the bill, the Violence Against Women Act, that
okay,
took
you did that.
Out of the hands of people who abused
her. Have a fact check.
Let's look at the fact check.
Oh my goodness.
The only thing that the boyfriend loophole was not covered. I couldn't get that covered. You, in fact, when you were as a senator, tried to get it covered, and Mitch McConnell is holding up on his desk right now, and we're going to lose the Violence Against Women Act across the board.
Okay. So if I could finish, I have the bill. Anyone can check it out.
Let's break this down, shall we? So first of all, he starts interrupting her. She goes, you didn't write the bill. I did that. I did that. You didn't do that. And I did that. And then she lets the crazy guy talk for a couple seconds, right? And then when the crazy guy's done talking, he admits that she did do the bill, right? You heard that? All right, let's hear it again. Go ahead.
The way we do it is having someone leading the ticket from a part of the country that we actually need the votes. So I have long supported the assault weapon ban. I am the author of the bill to close the boyfriend loophole that says that domestic abusers can't go out and get an AK-47.
I wrote that bill.
Along with... You didn't write that bill.
I wrote that bill. I wrote the bill. The Violence Against Women Act that
okay,
took
you did that.
Out of the hands of people who abused
we'll
her.
We'll have a fact check. Look,
no,
at
look
I'm
at
the one
check.
Who put the new copier in the break room. I did that. You didn't put the copier in the break room. No, you wanted the copier and you got it in there, but I wanted the other copier. And then I said to them, the hell with the copiers. And then I left.
So as a senator, he did write the Violence Against Women Act.
But I didn't get, you didn't write that. I mean, she lets him talk. And then when he's done, she goes, so anyway, and that was the best part. And then she goes, so anyway.
Let's look at the fact check.
Oh my goodness.
The only thing that the boyfriend loophole was not covered. I couldn't get that covered. You, in fact, when you were as a senator, tried to get it covered. And Mitch McConnell is holding up on his desk right now. And we're going to lose the Violence Against Women Act across the board.
Okay. So if I could finish. I have the bill. Anyone can check it out to close the boyfriend loophole. Also to close the Charleston loophole. It's another bill that's out there. Universal background checks. But let me say how we win this. We've got to win in the middle of the country. And while everyone talks about winning rural areas, suburban areas, I'm the only one up here with the receipts that has actually repeatedly, while being for the assault weapon ban, won in Republican congressional districts over and over again, including Michelle Bachmann's district. Having someone that can lead the ticket, that can bring people with her, is the way you get gun safety legislation. I look at these proposals and say, do they hurt my Uncle Dick in the deer stand? They do not.
My Uncle Dick in the deer stand. Do they hurt my Uncle Dick in the deer stand?
What?
Now, Senator, does that pass the Uncle Dick in the deer stand test?
And say, do they hurt my Uncle Dick in the deer stand?
Uncle Dick in the deer stand is not happy with this. Let's go live now to Uncle Dick in the deer stand for his take on this.
I don't know.
Uncle Dick in the deer stand. Your thoughts on tonight's debate? We'll have Uncle Dick from the deer stand on the show tomorrow, by the way.
I can't wait.
Live cover. Be live.
He's a Minnesotan?
He's hunting right now.
This is Uncle Dick.
This is the best time of day to hunt, as you know. So
yes, early in the morning.
Early in the morning. He's in the deer stand, but when the sun comes up, he might stop by the show later today.
Oh, nice.
It's the Uncle Dick in the deer stand rule, kids. Joe Biden also cured Ebola. Did you know that?
What?
Yeah, he cured Ebola. And a few other diseases, too, last night. Drunk retirement Joe Biden... In the middle of going on about diseases, starts yelling about how he cured Ebola.
We reached a turning point today with the CDC, warning schools that they missed prepare, that they might have to close. Members of the Trump administration saying we don't have enough medical masks if necessary. What would you do?
What we did with Ebola, I was part of making sure that pandemic did not get to the United States, saved millions of lives. And what we did, we set up, I helped set up that office in the presidency, in the president's office on diseases that are pandemic. Diseases. We increased the budget of the CDC. We increased the NIH.
I got that monkey in outbreak. I got him. I found that monkey in outbreak. You know the little one with the thing? Shit. It spread that. I killed him.
Shit. We should, if our president today, and he's wiped all that out. We did it. We stopped it. And the second thing I point
cured
out.
Ebola.
Wow.
And Trump brought it back. He brought it back because he hates America because Putin. Come on. Come on. Dawn, you got to admit, it's a little much to say they got rid of Ebola and now it's back because of Trump. What? What? I did that. I got that little monkey. Dustin Hoffman?
No, I don't. No, that's a movie. That's not.
Now I said to that monkey, you and your Ebola friends, and I went down there. I was in the tent. I cured it. Trump brought it back. Bah! Bad! He's Dan Aykroyd with the fish again. I'm telling you. He's Dan Aykroyd with the fish again and trading places. Bah! All right, go on.
And the second thing I'd point out to you is that what I would do immediately is restore the funding. He cut the funding for CDC. He tried to cut the funding for NIH. He cut the funding for the entire effort. And here's the deal. I would be on the phone with China and making it clear. We are going to need to be in your country. You have to be open. You have to be clear. We have to know what's going on. We have to be there with you and insist on it and insist. I could get that done. No one up here has ever dealt internationally with any of these world leaders. I'm the only one that has.
I'm the only one who got salesman of the year four times in a, and then he falls down. They pick him up. Ah, you millennials, you ruin everything. I did that. I won the trip to Hawaii 17 times.
Somebody pull the plug on this guy, please.
They're like, oh, my God, was this retirement speech ever going to end? God.
Thanks for taking the Zioli Show with you. Rich Zioli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Now, tomorrow is South Carolina's primary. And I do believe that Joe Biden will win. The question is by how much. If he wins by a lot, then Joe Biden has done the unthinkable and absolutely reset his campaign and turned it around. But some polls show Bernie Sanders is now in the lead in South Carolina. That means if Joe Biden loses tomorrow, it's over. But what if Joe Biden barely ekes out a win over Bernie Sanders? Then what? You might be stuck with Shecky Bloomberg. You might be stuck with Michael Dice Bloomberg. This is the unedited version. He goes to Oklahoma. He kills in Oklahoma. Mike Bloomberg kills in Oklahoma. They booked him at the Oklahoma Convention Center. I believe it was a bunch of Legionnaires. And he went there to do some stand-up.
Stand-up, yes.
And it was, he killed. This is the original unedited version.
I know some of you are still celebrating the Cowboys Bedlam basketball win over the Sooners last weekend. For all the Sooner fans here, just look at the bright side. At least you're not New York Knicks fans. Let's just say the Knicks are in worse shape than I-35. Now, I've also heard that your state senators propose renaming a stretch of Route 66 after Donald Trump. It boggles the mind. Just think about it. President Trump has declared Infrastructure Week 7 times and never passed an infrastructure bill. And naming a piece of major infrastructure project after Donald Trump is like naming a public health award after the Marlboro Man. You just can't make this stuff up, folks.
All right, I'll be here all week. And please, don't forget to tip your servers, all right? Try the veal. It's the best in the city.
Oh, my God.
All right? Shecky Bloomberg. So then the question was, how do we help him out? He's got all this money,
yeah.
But he needs a sound man there to be able to, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Little, and then it reminded us of Andrew Dice Clay back in the day. When Dice Man would come out, Philip Arenas wear the leather jacket. What, yes. What, Greg?
The Dice Man was the first person to sell out Madison Square Garden, the first comic to sell out Madison Square Garden.
And he used to do these rhymes, right? What? You know, he would take children's rhymes and turn them into very, very dirty jokes. And he would always end things with, oh! You know? Dawn, were you a fan of the Dice Man?
Yeah, I thought he was funny.
Yeah. Did the boys like him?
Yes.
Your boys know?
Yes.
Stop.
Because anything like that is like, it's kind of like, you know, Greg Stocker when he was young and he, you know what I mean? Like the 80s, you know, like the 80s stuff.
Right.
That's how the boys are with this kind of stuff. So it's really interesting how boys crave this. So it's very cool. So they'll say, Mom, you know who we discovered? You know, and they'll talk about something that's from, you know, back in the day. It's
I love
funny.
That. Yeah. I love that so much. That gives me hope for the future.
He can never get away with that stuff now. He's sexist, racist.
Homophobic. Yeah. It's everything. He's
misogynistic.
Yeah. That's the thing I say. I can't say the teacher's name, but don't mention that in front of Miss, you know, so-and-so, because she's very woke. There's, you know, so you have to be very, you have to teach them to have some discretion.
Right.
About what they, you know, there's like a bro covenant online that boys discuss. So you got to just like shut that down.
You got to shut it down.
After school, guys.
After school. Shut it down, boys.
Discretion.
Well, so what we did is we took Bloomberg killing it in Oklahoma and added a little dice to it.
I know some of you are still celebrating the Cowboys Bedlam basketball win over the Sooners last weekend. For all the Sooner fans here, just look at the bright side. At least you're not New York Knicks fans. Oh! Let's just say the Knicks are in worse shape than I-35.
Oh!
Now, I've also heard that your state senators propose renaming a stretch of Route 66 after Donald Trump.
Oh!
It boggles the mind. Just think about it. President Trump has declared Infrastructure Week 7 times and never passed an infrastructure bill. And naming a piece of major infrastructure project after Donald Trump is like naming a public health award after the Marlboro Man.
Oh! So much better with dice.
You just can't make this stuff up, folks.
Chris Eppolito again's got another poem for us. Ready? Little Miss Muffet sat on a tuffet, drinking her Big Gulp all day. Along came Minnie Mike, who sat down behind her and took that large soda away. Oh!
That's good.
That is good.
That is really good.
That is good.
We should hire Chris to be a writer on this show.
Seriously. Michael Dice Bloomberg.
Oh, Dice was so good. He was so good back in the day. Sorry.
He was so good. 855-839-1210. Let's see. Paul is in Chester County. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Rich. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. I heard you talking about the virus, and I just thought I'd kind of jump in. I manage money for a living, and I was telling the call screener that the fear of the virus is the virus today. And when you have, just by way of example, what Japan has just done is they've shut down their schools for the entire month of March. And, of course, that has an incredible impact on economies, not only in Japan, but also globally. Once you shut down supply line production, once you stop consumers going out because of fear, I don't even care if it's because of the virus, because of fear, you start to shut down world economies, and it really will have a dramatic effect on gross domestic product. All of that rolls down into less revenue. All of that rolls down into less earnings per share. And so whether it's real or not, and I believe it is, you're going to have an incredible effect on economies, and things are beginning to slow down and probably going to slow down additionally in the future.
I think what you said is brilliant. Fear is the virus.
Yeah. Well, and again, the problem that we face is, not to get into too much detail on the numbers, but the fact of the matter is the mortality rate or the morbidity rate in this is...
You know what? You just broke up. I'm sorry, but you're breaking up the end. I think what you said is absolutely right, though. And look, so this brings me back to the media, right? Front page today of the Philadelphia Inquirer was not about the safe injection site being shot down by the wonderful people of the neighborhood who spoke up. But headline, virus concerns accelerate Wall Street route. Front page above the fold. Good morning, America. All morning. Coronavirus. Should you accept packages from China? This is what I mean. If you scare the hell out of people and they stop spending money, they cancel their travel plans, they don't go on vacation, they don't buy a car, they start hoarding cash, you could cause a recession because 70% of this economy is consumer spending. So don't tell me that George Stephanopoulos does not want to see the economy go into some sort of a recession so that he can get rid of Donald Trump. Don't tell me that these people don't want Donald Trump to lose. And they know what they can do is to scare people enough and maybe they'll get a recession and then maybe then Trump can lose. Because otherwise, there's no chance this guy's going to lose, period. It's the only thing they can do. That's what they're doing.
But does this force something new? And that is, let's say you said, well, we're going to keep the kids home at school. My kids' school said, hey, we're still going to have class. It's all going to be cyber. And the kids are like, oh, I can play video games all day. So people are going to shop online. All you need is the delivery people.
Yeah, but that's why they do the segment on should you accept things from China?
Well,
because they don't want you to do
just
that.
Just spray it with Lysol.
Oh, right. Yeah, right.
Outside on the doorstep. And
no,
then
but you listen, but your point is, it's an excellent point you make, which is that the online shopping. Well, they've addressed that too. Good Morning America segment on should you accept packages from China? Could that made in China package that's coming from Amazon, could that have the virus on it? All you got to do is convince some people it might, and then they stop buying things online because most of the stuff's made in China. Get it?
Well, that's just stupid.
Of course it's stupid. I'm not saying any of this makes sense. I'm telling you why they're doing it.
Right.
I'm not saying it makes sense or it's right. I'm not saying it's absolutely based in logic. I'm telling you why they're doing it. I'm giving you the why.
See, if I work for Lysol or one of these disinfecting companies, I'm just saying, hey, this is what we're spraying on every package that comes in. You know what I mean? Just raise your stock. There's always an answer in capitalism. I just think
I'm not saying it's going to work. I'm telling you why they're doing it.
Yes.
Let me read more dice poems here. Hickory Dickory Dock. Mini Mike the mouse went up the clock. The clock struck three as Megaphone Bernie pounced with glee and swallowed Mini Mike before he could flee.
Oh!
Tranchaliti Law. Well done. Let's see now. Oh, this is fantastic. Half hour into the bit, Dice Bloomberg could eclipse Megaphone Bernie. People are loving this. Here we go. Johnny Cook. I pried the plastic straw out of the fat broad's paw. Now she can begin to finally win. I got to start this over. Hang on. I pried the plastic straw out of the fat broad's paw. Now she can begin to finally win her race from the lesbian face, the horse face lesbian. I screwed that up.
Oh!
Of course. Elizabeth Warren.
Yes.
That's a satire on Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.